As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to it. It is a free agency frenzy edition of the Athletic Hockey Show. Ian Mendez, Sean McIndoe with you for this edition of the podcast. Ahead in the next hour or so, we'll connect with Jesse Granger from Vegas, and it's not the usual Granger things. This time, Jesse's going to try and explain the shocking trade on Tuesday that sent Marc-Andre Fleury to Chicago, with Vegas seemingly getting nothing in return. We'll also hit on Alex Ovechkin's new contract and whether it means he's going to break Wayne Gretzky's all-time goal record. Tony DeAngelo appears to be on the cusp of joining the Carolina Hurricanes. We'll discuss how he fits in with those bunch of jerks. And is it time to eliminate the NHL draft altogether? We'll debate that topic after Josh Cloke's column this week in The Athletic, which certainly gave us pause for thought. We'll open up the mailbag, and this week in hockey history looks at Brendan Shanahan's unique trade tree and Luke Robitaille's cameo in the Steel City. We'll get to all of that coming up in the next hour or so. Sean, as we kick off this show, we often say the NHL offseason is boring. I wish I was an NBA fan. We don't get enough trades. We don't get enough jaw-dropping moments. Over the last 5 days, we'll go back to Friday, draft day, right through Tuesday, right into the start of free agency. Have you had enough excitement in the NHL world to satisfy you?
I'd say it's been pretty good. I don't think we got to the NBA level. We haven't had any four-team deals involving sure thing Hall of Famers or any of that sort of drama. But by NHL standards, it's been pretty fun. And I don't know if it's the expansion draft or the flat cap or the condensed offseason or maybe just all three of them. But there has been a lot of intrigue. There's been a lot of real interesting moves, and it has been fun. It's been a while since we've had one of those days or weeks where it feels like you don't want to put Twitter down for an hour, because by then you come back from your lunch break, and all hell's going to have broken loose somewhere. So it's been good. This is fun. Probably not fun for the players or the GMs or anyone, but for fans. This is the sort of stuff we look forward to in the offseason, and for once the NHL seems to be delivering.
Yeah, and look, we'll get into the seismic news from Tuesday involving Marc-Andre Fleury. We'll save that for a chat with Jesse Granger, because you know what, he covers the Vegas Golden Knights. That'll be good. But some other news that has come down on Tuesday that includes Alex Ovechkin, Sean. And I got to tell you, when I saw that Ovechkin was re-signing, I thought, okay, is this a one-year deal? Is it maybe like a two-year? It's a five-year deal. And to me, That seems to signal I'm going to take a run at Wayne Gretzky's all-time record of goals. And he's 164 goals away from tying it, 165 to break it, which means he needs to average 33 goals a season in the life of this contract, the five-year deal. Were you surprised that it's a five-year deal for Alex Ovechkin?
I was. And in fact, I'll kind of walk you through my thought process on this, because when I first saw the news and I saw that it was 5 years, I thought, oh boy, that's going to be a problem, because Alexander Ovechkin is over the age of 35. And remember, in the NHL, if you're over 35 and you sign a multi-year deal, there are some special rules that come into play, depending on how the contract is structured, as far as bonuses and backloading, that sort of thing. And this contract falls under those rules, which means if Alexander Ovechkin retires at any point in this contract, the full cap hit stays with the Washington Capitals. If he gets bought out at any point in this contract, the full cap hit stays with the Capitals. Basically, there is no way for Washington to get out of this, out of the cap hit of this, aside from the long-term injury reserve, which is still out there. But other than that, they're locked in. And generally speaking, that's a real bad idea. This is the rule that's in place because this was the part of the response to teams signing backdiving deals and giving guys contracts that expired when they were 43. And we all knew they weren't going to play the whole thing, but they were keeping the cap hit low. So my first thought is, boy, this is high risk for the Washington Capitals. But I thought it over. I kind of chewed on it a bit. I'm not actually sure that it is all that high a risk, because this is Alexander Ovechkin we're talking about. This guy has been a horse his whole career. Does anybody really see a scenario where he walks away early, where he says, you know what, I'm done. I think I've had enough of the NHL, especially if he's still chasing that record. Can anybody imagine him 3 years into this deal saying, yeah, you know what, I think that's enough. I'm going to retire and stick in the Capitals with a cap hit. Now, could he get hurt? Yeah. Any player could get hurt, but again, that's when the long-term injury reserve kicks in and you don't really have to carry that cap hit if you're Washington. I don't see this guy retiring. The only scenario I can see it happening, and a few people raise this to me, is if he breaks the record in 4 years and then says, you know what, I don't need to stick around for a fifth year. I'm already the all-time goals king. And yeah, I suppose that's a risk. You know what? If he does that, if he pulls it off, there's nobody in Washington can say that they're upset about carrying a cap hit for an extra year. I mean, you will have just seen one of the greatest careers in the history of hockey. If he wants to go out under those circumstances, you got a smile on your face if you're a Capitals fan. So I don't really see this as a risk, even though I would say it would be under pretty much any other set of circumstances for any other player in the league.
You know what? And if he breaks it in 4 years, that means he's averaged 40 goals a year for 4 years. So yeah, listen, if he does it in 4 years, it's been a remarkable run. I saw a lot of people say, like, oh wow, like Alex Ovechkin really didn't take a pay cut here. He's basically signing again for 9.5. But I do think it's important, and the folks at Cap Friendly pointed this out, his percentage of the cap that he's taking up for Washington is far different. Like, you know, when he signed that first deal, the 13-year deal, it was about 19.5% of the cap. So he was almost taking up one-fifth of Washington's cap space by himself. Now it's 11%. So I think it's significantly different. While it may not look like Alex Ovechkin necessarily took a pay cut, he did take a lesser part of the pie, if that makes sense, right?
I often wonder how the hockey world and the NHL world and the fans and the media would be different if, when the cap came in, if we had started using percentage as the number that we hit on when somebody signed. And somebody would sign and we'd say, yeah, it's this many dollars, it's 10% of the cap. Because that way, as the cap went up over time and changed over time, you know, we'd still be comparing apples to apples. And I feel like we'd have a really different outlook on a lot of this stuff. Look, I understand that maybe on some level, if you're a Capitals fan, you're sitting there going, boy, it would have been nice after all these years, he's already made so much money. Boy, it would have been great if he had taken less money. And that way the Capitals could use that extra cap space, those extra dollars, to surround him with more talent, take another run at a title, all of this stuff. It's always so easy for us to say that sitting at home when it's somebody else's money and somebody else's paycheck that we're talking about. At the end of the day, Alexander Ovechkin is going to have earned every dollar he made in the NHL. There's a lot of guys out there, a lot of guys where you might look back and say, boy, you know, this last contract, boy, I don't know, or they signed this deal and gosh, that didn't work out. When Alexander Ovechkin is his career is all said and done, nobody's going to look back on him and say, yeah, that guy made too much. So you know what? Good for him. It's a fair price. It does carry some risk for Washington, but at this point, when you're chasing history and you got a guy who's been easily the greatest player in franchise history by a mile, you know what? You're happy to pay it. I can't imagine anybody out there is gritting their teeth over paying Alexander Ovechkin what he's owed.
Yeah, that certainly, you're right. And when you explain it, it's a low risk contract given his productivity, even though he's at his age. A high-risk contract, though, Sean, might be the one that the Carolina Hurricanes are about to sign with Tony DeAngelo. And Frank Cervelli deserves the full credit. He was, I believe, the first to report this, that the Carolina Hurricanes are on the verge of signing controversial defenseman Tony DeAngelo to a one-year contract. Now, to kind of walk our listeners through this, Tony DeAngelo is a guy that was sent home by the New York Rangers early in this past season, has had a couple of missteps, we'll call it, on social media. Has had a falling out with a couple of teammates, just didn't seem to particularly fit in New York. And what's really interesting to me in all of this, Sean, is, you know, the Carolina Hurricanes are sometimes viewed as this fun and at times progressive hockey team. And I'm wondering, within the context of that, is this a surprising juxtaposition? You have the Carolina Hurricanes, the bunch of jerks, the guys that do the post-game sellies that seem to embrace the lighter side of hockey, have now reportedly brought in a very, very polarizing young man in Tony DeAngelo. I think it's a really interesting story here that's developed.
Yeah, it is. And look, we knew that Tony DeAngelo was going to get another chance somewhere. It was somewhat surprising that a young up and coming team in New York had washed their hands of this guy, because it takes a lot. When you're somebody who can contribute on the ice, you get a lot of chances in this league. And the fact that the Rangers eventually said enough is enough kind of tells you all you need to know. But we knew that somebody else was gonna give him another chance. And, you know, we don't know the deal as we're recording this. It's not signed and sealed, and we don't know the details. So I guess we'll have to wait and see, and we'll have to wait and see how the Hurricanes organization handles it and handles him, and how much rope he's given, so to speak. We'll see. But at the end of the day, I mean, if you have a certain set of values and you're hoping that your favorite team will always live up to them, I think we've learned over the last week, yet another reminder that eventually they will probably let you down. Let's see where it goes. Maybe this is the start of a second chance that actually works out, and we see a young player turn things around and become a better player and a better person, and get at least some sense of a happy ending. We'll see. It could also go very badly for the Carolina Hurricanes, and hopefully they've weighed that risk, and I guess at some point and at some level in the organization, they've decided that it's worth it.
Yeah, and listen, I think I'm all in favor of second opportunities for people, and at the very least, I think on this case, you could make an argument that enough time has elapsed where maybe, as you suggest, Tony DeAngelo has a different view of things, or feels like, I know where I made some mistakes, or I think I could be a better teammate. So there's been some time. So again, sometimes we, in the world of hot takery, we rush to, you know, condemn and judge. And I don't feel like there was enough time in the Logan Mailloux story, but I do think that there might be enough time here with Tony DeAngelo. So again, like you said, we'll have to see how that plays out. But he goes in, it looks like he's going to go into Carolina. It looks like Sean, Dougie Hamilton's going to leave the Hurricanes. And so let me ask you this: as we open up free agency here on this Wednesday, Seth Jones got a higher AAV than Cale Makar, which I don't know that I would have predicted a week ago, but this is where we're at. Seth Jones at 9.5, Cale Makar at 9. Where does Dougie Hamilton come in? Does Dougie Hamilton get close to nine, eight on the free agent market? Like, I don't know about the term, but just about the dollar value.
Yeah. If I had to bet, I don't think he gets to a number that starts with a nine, but I wouldn't be completely shocked if he did. I mean, he's the best defenseman who's out there. We just saw a lot of movement with defensemen, which in some cases will remove certain teams from the bidding, but also means in certain cases that there may be teams that had a list of guys, and now that list is looking a lot smaller than it did a week ago. And it only takes one team to go to a high number, and it only takes a few teams for a bidding war that pushes it to that high number. But I don't think he ultimately gets there. Something starting with an eight wouldn't surprise me, though. And it's going to be interesting to see where he goes. You know, you mentioned the term. Obviously, that's key. This is a guy who, for whatever reason, has moved around the league a fair amount already. There have been, there's some talk about, he hasn't fit in this room or that room, and it's always for weird reasons, or you're kind of scratching your head going, man, this is a great player. You figure there's going to be some teams that are going to say, we absolutely want to be the front of the line on this guy. It's just a question of what the number is going to be. But I think it's going to be a big number, and I think it's both in terms of the years and the dollars. Kale McCarr numbers, well, probably not. Seth Jones, you could argue that this is a better player right now today than Seth Jones. But I think we also know that when a team goes out and trades for a guy, they're under all sorts of pressure to give him a big contract. And I think Chicago sort of boxed themselves into a situation there where they had to hand out a deal that there's a good chance that they may ultimately wish that they hadn't. But we'll see. And we'll see on Dougie Hamilton. Don't think he quite gets to the nine, but I think he gets close.
But do you think we get back to silly season? You remember pre-pandemic, it was like you would hope that your general manager, somebody would take their phone away from them June 30th through July 3rd inclusive, so that they wouldn't reach out and make some sort of silly deal. We saw that kind of evaporate during the pandemic, right? And that was more of an external circumstance that seemed to influence the market, and we didn't see the 7x7 deals last summer. We might see them this summer. We may see it with Dougie Hamilton. I'm going to throw three names at you here, Sean. And these are the typical kind of, and maybe Zach Hyman's not your typical middle six forward, but he might have a little bit more upside. But these are guys who are going to get paid at some point in the next 24 hours. I'm asking you, which of these forwards is going to sign one of those contracts that in 24 hours you're like, oh, damn, that's a mistake. Okay? So there's Zach Hyman, there's Philip Deneau, and there's Blake Coleman. And they're all really good, effective, kind of blue-collar, like kind of that role. But they might all get paid like they're legit top six guys. Is there one of those three guys that you're like, uh-oh, someone's going to overpay for them, and then like 18 months from now, they're going to have buyer's regret?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly potential with all three of them. I guess the guy that would make me a little bit more nervous than others is Blake Coleman. Not in the sense that if I'm a GM that I'd be nervous to bring him on. There's none of these three guys has that David Clarkson, Milan Lucic vibe to them as far as I see. I just see some GM out there talking themselves into not just, hey, do we want this hardworking guy, the middle six, all of the things that Zach Hyman and Philip Deneau can do, but Blake Coleman, boy, you also get those rings. And GMs love the rings in the room. Here's a guy with that. Now he's got that championship pedigree. Oh, I could probably talk myself into maybe going a little out of my comfort zone to get a winner like that. That's maybe the one that I think doesn't necessarily age well. I'll say this. Zach Hyman, we almost know what the deal is already. It feels like there's no suspense there. We know that barring something really unforeseen, he's going to Edmonton. The deal's already agreed to. The Leafs did give him permission to talk to other teams, so there's no tampering here. It's all been above the board. There was some talk there might be a sign and trade so he could get the eighth year. It doesn't sound like that's going to happen. That is a deal where, frankly, if Edmonton goes 7 years at a number in north of five, which it sounds like they will, that is a deal that's going to age badly. That is a deal that by year 6 and 7 is not going to look great. Very likely, just given Zach Hyman and his style of play and how players like that usually age out. But even having said that, I don't hate that deal for Edmonton because you've got Connor McDavid and Leandro Seidel right now. And at some point, you know, I cringed when Dave Nonis said he wasn't worried about years 6 and 7 when it came to David Clarkson. But I think Edmonton could make an excuse or make the argument that they don't need to worry about years 6 and 7 right now. Go get a good player. So I think he's going to be a great fit there. Philippe Danault made himself a lot of money in the playoffs because he looked great. That's one that could potentially go south relatively quickly. But the numbers that have been reported don't sound crazy for him. And, you know, you're talking about a guy who can play center. That's big. Coleman's the one that worries me a little bit, just in the sense that I could see some GM out there overpaying and talking themselves and their owner into this idea that we're going to get a guy who's a proven winner and he's going to come in with those flashing those Stanley Cup rings and he's going to teach the rest of us how to get it done.
Like, it's funny, you brought up David Clarkson's name unprompted there. A couple
yeah, I do that a lot.
Yeah.
I'm told that I do that in at least 50% of the conversations I have day to day. So
yeah, that is he the all time worst? Like, and I know that you know obviously the Leafs are your team, so maybe sometimes you do look through that lens. But is there a word like is there an argument on Bobrovsky the Florida? Is there anybody else who you look at and you're like, that's the worst free agent signing of all time?
There's definitely some. I mean, Clarkson gets maybe a little more attention because it was Toronto and because not just that it's the Leafs, but this was back in the era where the Leafs were the dumb team that was convinced it was the smart team. And this was just kind of the culmination of that way of thinking. But there have been a lot of others. I mean, the Lucic deal, James Neal, Andrew Ladd, you go down the list of, you know, all the just 2016, I think it was alone, just all the wingers that were signing 6 and 7 year deals and almost none of them have worked out. Bobrovsky, we need to see, but 2 years in, that one is not looking good at all. And I'll throw one more at you. And this one comes with an asterisk because technically this wasn't a free agent deal, but the Philadelphia Flyers and Ilya Bryzgalov, remember when they gave him 11 years at something? I mean, it was close to 60 million. I mean, it was just an absolute, albatross of a deal. And not only did they give him that money, but in order to clear the space, they went and traded Jeff Carter and Mike Richards. That wasn't the only reason they traded them, but that both of those guys dealt on the same day. I remember that being one of those legendary Twitter days where you saw both those deals hit the wire at the same time to make room for a guy. And then you talk about Sergei Bobrovsky. Sergei Bobrovsky was on the Flyers roster at that point. He was their backup. He was ready to go. Let me have a chance at starting. And they go and sign Bryzgalov. So a year later, they trade Bobrovsky for next to nothing and see him go on to win Vezinas. The reason I say it technically wasn't a free agency deal is because he was a pending free agent and they traded for his rights and signed him a few days beforehand. So in theory, it wasn't a pure UFA acquisition. But I think other than that technicality, I think that's the one that has to stand out as the worst of the worst. Didn't make any sense even when they did it. And then, of course, the fact that he didn't play well and within a couple of years he's getting bought out. And I mean, that buyout, I think, is on their cap for a while now. Just a mess all the way around.
You know, with the Bobrovsky deal, I believe that happened in the 2011 at the draft. Because I was in Minnesota for the draft. And I'm in a hotel. I just have this distinct memory. I'm in a hotel lobby. And Rich Winter, longtime agent who was Bobrovsky's agent, actually flagged me down. He says, hey, you want a scoop? I'm like, yeah, of course I'll take a scoop. He says, hey, the Bobrovsky deal is done. I think at that point the Bobrovsky deal had been done to Philly. But he said, Sergei Bobrovsky is going to be the highest paid player in the NHL next year. You can have that. I said, what? He said, Sergei Bobrovsky.
Bryzgalov, you mean, right? Bryzgalov.
Oh, sorry. Ilya Bryzgalov. Okay, sorry. Sorry. I'm getting my overpaid Russian netminders confused. Sorry. Ilya Bryzgalov. He calls me over and he's like, I got something for you. Ilya Bryzgalov is going to be the highest paid goalie. I was like, wait, what? And he was like, yeah, I'm telling you, he's going to be the highest paid player in the game next year. And I was like, wow. Because I feel like it was like right around the time Carter and Richards, if it wasn't the 2011 draft in Minnesota, then something is completely off. But I feel like
it was 2011 and it was.
And I feel like I got called over. Yeah.
Yeah. And it would have been right around the time of the draft. Because like I said, they traded for him. So they didn't have to wait until July 1st. And they get, in fact, I'm looking it up right now. Yeah. The signing date was June 23rd, 2011. So that would have been right around there. He made $10 million in year one, even though the deal, because it was so long, the average, the cap hit was like 5.5, but he made $10 million between bonuses and salary.
Yeah.
Just a super, super expensive. And I guess the only good thing is, as I'm looking at it, I said that it's still on the Flyers cap. It was a compliance buyout, so they didn't have to eat the cap hit. But in terms of they're still sending him checks. Good bit of work if you can get it, I guess. But just a total misfire all the way around. The only other piece of good news, though, you could say at least, and I know there were a lot of Flyers fans that were furious that day when they traded Carter and Richards, but both of those trades worked out pretty well. So, you know, it's one of those things where you could maybe look back and say, well, you know, this flap of a butterfly wing led to, you know, us getting these other guys. But the signing itself, I can't imagine how you could even start to defend it. Just awful.
Yeah, the Flyers need to lean into paying Bobrovsky like the Mets do with Bobby Bonilla. Just be, like, make it a day, turn it into anything. Today's the day Bob gets his check, and away we go.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I'll tell you what, you know, it's funny, when I think of Ilya Brizgalov, I think of there was a great playoff series, I think in 2012, Philly and Pittsburgh. It was Brizgalov, and it was just a complete meltdown for Marc-Andre Fleury. A lot of people thought, you know what, Marc-Andre Fleury will never get it back. And then sure enough, now almost a decade later, he's the reigning Vezina Trophy winner, but he just got traded on Tuesday. To help us break this one down, because Sean and I, I'm sure, were perplexed, it is time for Granger Things, which is brought to you by our exclusive betting partner, BetMGM. But we're not going to be setting any lines or odds or anything like that. We're just going to be straight up, Jesse, talking with you about Marc-Andre Fleury. So give us a sense. I think for people like Sean and I, surprised that, you know, he got traded. There's nothing in return, like literally nothing in return. What went through your mind? Walk our listeners through how Tuesday played out as Marc-Andre Fleury got traded to Chicago.
Yeah, from a numbers standpoint and just looking at the contracts of the two goalies, Marc-Andre Fleury and Robin Lehner, and the Golden Knights cap space and their ability or inability to improve their team this offseason because they have none, I don't think it's that surprising that they traded a goalie in that context. But then when you factor in the human element, the fact that Marc-Andre Fleury has been the face of this franchise, the anchor of the locker room, the backbone of this team, his teammates use all of these phrases on a daily basis when talking about him. When it's that guy who's coming off of his best season as a pro, just winning the Vezina Trophy, and I had to go back and look, since they changed the criteria for the Vezina Trophy in 1981, only one Vezina Trophy winner has been traded, and that was Dominik Hasek from Buffalo after his Vezina in 01, and he went to Detroit and won his Stanley Cup the following season. But I think once you add in all those things and just what Fleury meant to this team and what he meant to this city, I've seen it on Twitter, the reaction. The fans are obviously not thrilled, but a GM and a front office can't make decisions based off of the fans' feelings. I think when you look at things, you can see why Kelly McCrimmon made this trade. I don't know how it's going to work out. They're putting a lot of faith in Robin Leonard, a lot of faith that other GMs around the league haven't made to this point. I mean, Robin Leonard was a free agent in three consecutive off seasons and couldn't get a long-term deal. And despite playing very, very well. So maybe he finally found a team that believes in him and the Golden Knights and he can reciprocate that and pay them back with franchise goaltending. If not, then obviously that's a huge issue because that's a position that this team has not had to worry about from opening night 2017 as an expansion. They have had Marc-Andre Fleury in net and they have not had to worry about it even once in this entire four seasons. So suddenly I think Robin Leonard's a good enough goalie. I think most people think Robin Leonard's a good enough goalie to handle that load, but I think it does, while it does open you up to improve, and certainly the Golden Knights are in a better spot to make moves to improve their team now than they were this morning, it also, there's a risk to this. As good as Robin Leonard has been, moving on from Marc-Andre Fleury, we see in Pittsburgh, they felt really good when they moved on from Marc-Andre Fleury in 2017 when they let him go to Vegas. They felt great about that, so great that they gave Vegas a second-round pick to take him. And 4 years later, their goaltending is in disarray. So I think there is a bit of a risk here. But when you look at the age of the player, the contract left, and you see that Robin Leonard is 7 years younger and has 4 years left on his deal, there are reasons that this didn't come out of left field. This wasn't just completely out of nowhere.
Just to keep the focus on the Knights for a minute, to state the obvious, this wasn't a case of a team looking at its goaltending and saying, our goaltending's not good enough, we're not satisfied with what we've got there. This is a team that wants to improve elsewhere and needs cap space in order to do it. And so they, rather than continue to spend $12 million on two goalies, they moved one of the guys out. I know I'm not the only one, as soon as I saw this come across the feed, who was thinking, this is the space for Jack Eichel. Now, Kelly McCrimmon seemed to throw a little bit of cold water on that when he was asked about acquiring a center, and he sort of said, we're not as eager to do that as some seem to think, or something to that extent. But is this the Golden Knights clearing the space for Jack Eichel?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's certainly, there's a chance of that. So this is my read, and I'm actually writing this, I'm in the middle of writing this right now. My read on the whole situation is Bill Foley, the owner of the Golden Knights, absolutely adores Marc-Andre Fleury. He told Fleury personally, you will retire a Golden Knight. He, from what we heard last offseason, was a big reason Fleury was on this team last season for the Vezina Trophy. So to me, you have an owner who loves a player and did not want to trade him. The only way Kelly McCrimmon and George McPhee in the front office could have convinced Bill Foley to trade Marc-Andre Fleury is if they had some kind of plan set up, right? There is no way Bill Foley sat in his office and they said, hey, we're going to trade Fleury to open up $7 million in cap space the day before free agency opens, and then we'll figure it out, right? Like, there's no chance Bill Foley signs off on that. This is just my read. I haven't talked to Bill Foley. This is just my read. And the way the Golden Knights have swung big in free agency and trades leads you to believe that they're going to be aggressive. Kelly McCrimmon did say, like you said, he threw some cold water on it, saying we like our centers. William Karlsson's one of the best two-way centers in the league. He is a very good center, but Chandler Stephenson, when you compare him to other top centers around the league, is not elite. And so I think he threw some water on it, but he also said things don't always unfold the way you want to. Basically saying, I'm not going to tell you guys why we traded him, because there's a lot of moving parts, especially with trades and free agency. And maybe if I tell you guys our plan, that could not happen tomorrow. Other things could happen. So I do think that by saying that, McCrimmon kind of lets us into his mind a little bit. They do have an idea and they have to have a plan, whether it's Jack Eichel or Tarasenko or Gabriel Landeskog, or there's no way Bill Foley signed off trading the face of this franchise for them to add a couple depth third line wingers that are going to help them score in the playoff. Like, I just don't see how that's possible. So yes, I expect the Golden Knights to make a big move here. Jack Eichel's the obvious one because he's available. He's the best player available in the league right now, and he fits exactly what they need, which is a top center. I don't know if that trade's going to happen, but I do expect the Golden Knights to be very aggressive.
And it's worth remembering, right, that if we're talking about free agents, at least in theory, the Golden Knights can't have spoken to anybody yet until the market opens tomorrow. But if we're talking trades, Jack Eichel or Tarasenko or somebody else, those conversations may have already happened. They could be further down that road than any of us think.
Right. I think they have to have something in mind. It might not be set, whether it's a, if it's a free agent, it's definitely not set, but there has to be, like I said, knowing Bill Foley the way I know him and how much he liked Fleury and then how much he wanted to keep him on that team, there was no way that this was just a, we're going to clear some cap space and then we'll see what we do after that.
Okay, so explain to me, and you've said this a couple of times, Jesse, that the owner, Bill Foley, has a ton of respect and admiration for Marc-Andre Fleury. We have seen the narrative, you are, I believe, the first to actually report that Marc-Andre Fleury found out about this trade via Twitter. Alan Walsh's agent confirmed that, and it doesn't seem like Marc-Andre Fleury was necessarily treated with a ton of respect and transparency during this process. So have we learned anything as to why that played out the way it did? Because if you're saying they love Fleury, they know he's the face of the franchise, why did they do Marc-Andre Fleury like this?
Yeah, and we just spoke to Kelly McCrimmon, and he did provide a little more clarity, and he said that they have been in conversations with Marc-Andre. He said that they spoke to him June 29th, the exit meetings. They told him, we're not sure what we're going to do with our goalies. McCrimmon said that they have approached him a couple times since then, saying, hey, we're having talks with this team. He said that they did mention Chicago. From what I hear, those conversations did happen, but every time they happened, Marc-Andre Fleury basically told them, I want to remain in Vegas. If you trade me to Chicago, I don't want to play there. And it has nothing to do with Chicago. Just for Blackhawks fans, listen out there. Marc-Andre Fleury has nothing against Chicago. It's the fact that he wanted to retire in Vegas. And McCrimmon kind of confirmed that, saying when he was asked if Fleury gave him any indication that he wouldn't play for Chicago, McCrimmon answered, Marc-Andre Fleury wanted to play in Vegas. So I don't think that part can, like, he... Fleury clearly told McCrimmon, don't trade me. I don't want to be traded. There's a chance I could retire. As far as today, Marc-Andre Fleury found out through Twitter. McCrimmon said that that was because they don't inform players about trades until their trade call has gone through. And Frank Saravalli and Elliott and those guys, they broke the trade before their trade call finished. According to McCrimmon, it was before their trade call with the Central Registry had even begun. So that was McCrimmon's answer for that. And I think on the surface, if this was the only time this had ever happened, I think it's fair to say, okay, that was a lack of communication. Probably not the best way. The guy who's been the franchise for the last 4 years probably should have found out from the team. For me, the reason I'm a little more hesitant to give the Golden Knights a pass on this is just because this seems to be a trend with players. When Gerard Gallant was fired, when Nate Schmidt was traded last offseason, he found out in ways that he would have preferred not to have. This has been a trend with this team, and I think that while I do understand from Kelly McCrimmon's perspective, like, I don't want to announce anything until it's official, I don't want to tell the player, I think other teams are handling things differently. And I think Marc-Andre Fleury has spoken multiple times about how it ended in Pittsburgh and how he really liked the way that the Penguins handled that. And it was a similar situation where they brought in another goalie and they decided he was their guy. So I think it's not as clean cut as the Golden Knights screwed this up or they handled it perfectly. I think there's some gray area here, but I think there are reasons to believe that the Golden Knights and the communication between the Golden Knights and Marc-Andre Fleury has not been great for some time.
Yeah, that I don't know. I have a real tough time with that. This wasn't some complicated four player or four team deal with 10 guys and salary retained. This was one for one where the one guy is a minor leaguer who's not even switching teams. So I have a hard time thinking that they were too concerned the league was going to put a stop to this deal. Okay, so Marc-Andre Fleury, now he is a Chicago Blackhawk, does not want to be, has said that he is considering whether retirement may be an option. That would certainly be pretty close to unprecedented for a reigning Vezina guy to hang him up when he's just had his best season. So everybody's looking at this and we're all, I think, doing the same math and 2 + 2 = 4. So does Marc-Andre Fleury now wind up being traded again from Chicago to somewhere else? And is that somewhere else anywhere other than the Pittsburgh Penguins reunion we've all been waiting for the last few years?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely makes sense to connect those dots. One thing we haven't really mentioned that's part of this trade that I think is a big part of this trade. I mean, the Golden Knights just traded the best goalie in the entire NHL last year for absolutely nothing. And this isn't a hypothetical nothing. It's literally nothing. They traded him for a minor leaguer who will remain in Chicago's organization and play for their AHL team. They literally traded him for nothing. So that's they traded him for cap space. You could argue that they're not able to make that next move without doing that. So they did trade him for cap space, but to get, this is not a good pattern. They traded Nate Schmidt for absolutely nothing last offseason because they had to after signing Pietrangelo. They did the same thing with Paul Stastny to Winnipeg. They constantly trading really talented players for nothing is not ideal. And now Chicago may be able to turn around and maybe get something for him if they were to trade him to Pittsburgh. I don't know. What I will say about Fleury's playing or not playing or retiring, I think the side of him that's saying retire is purely his family loves Las Vegas. His wife, his kids, they absolutely love this city. They did not want to move. That was a big motivating factor in him saying he wanted to stay in Vegas. I think Marc-Andre Fleury, the hockey player, is not done. Speaking to him several times this offseason after he won the Vezina and just having conversations with him about his future, he always says, as long as I'm having fun, I want to keep playing. And he had about as much fun as he could have this year, playing the best hockey of his life. I do not expect him to be done, whether he plays in Chicago or Pittsburgh or wherever. I don't expect Marc-Andre Fleury to retire.
Okay, final question, and this is probably something I think the both of you can answer, and this is something that I think is on the minds of a lot of hockey fans. And you mentioned this, Jesse, that Chicago Blackhawks did the Vegas Golden Knights a little bit of a favor, and that now Vegas can improve their team. So what's in it for Chicago, guys? Like, can somebody walk me through Chicago's mindset here? Because, okay, well, maybe if they get Marc-Andre Fleury and he plays, I can understand you're getting the reigning Vezina Trophy winning goalie, but it's clear that he may not want to go there. So why would Chicago do such a huge favor for Vegas and really give nothing back in return?
Yeah, I mean, my read on Chicago is if you get Marc-Andre Fleury, clearly, the thing is, like, everyone outside of Chicago seems to be saying, like, you need to rebuild. Meanwhile, the Blackhawks within are saying, like, no, we don't. We've got Kane, and we're going for it now. We're trading for Seth Jones. We're giving him a bazillion dollars. We're trading for a 37-year-old Marc-Andre Fleury. They're going for it. And I think at the end of the day, like, let's just assume Fleury does show up in Chicago and plays well, which we should expect him to the way he's played the last few seasons. I think if you're Chicago, even if this season doesn't go as you expect, if it's bad, I think at the trade deadline, a Marc-Andre Fleury who you can retain salary on and you can deal to a team that needs a goalie at the deadline, I think they could end up flipping him for good future picks. Like, that would be my read on Chicago.
Yeah, I think Chicago has got the cap space. They need the goaltending. Their goaltending was, we went into last year thinking it was going to be a disaster because they had three guys nobody had ever heard of, and it was pretty good for about a month. And then it was an issue the rest of the way. And my guess is, even if you hook Stan Bowman up to a lie detector and say, where do you really think you are as far as contending, rebuilding? And he might say, you know what, this is another rebuilding year. At some point, when you got young players out there, you don't want to have a young team in front of lousy goaltending, because then every mistake ends up in the back of the net. There's just no margin for error, and everyone's hanging their heads, and it's just, you're waiting for the puck to end up in your net. So I could see that, this idea that, hey, let's bring in this guy. We talk about earlier in the show about bringing in somebody with rings. Well, here's a proven winner. He's going to be great. He's going to be the veteran in the room. The kids will all learn from him. He's going to be fantastic. Great personality. It makes all sorts of sense. If you got the cap room and you can get a Vezina winner for nothing, absolutely go out and do it. And like Jesse says, even if it doesn't work, you could flip them at the deadline for assets. You could probably flip them right now for assets. I mean, if Chicago were to put up a sign and say, we'll retain half the salary, who wants Marc-Andre Fleury for 3.5? They'll get something real nice for him, assuming it's someplace that he wants to go. So
just rooting for chaos. How great would it be if they flip him to Colorado and Fleury's playing against the Avalanche? Man. Avalanche.
You know what? I never even thought of that. All right. I'm on board with that one now. Now we gotta make that happen. The Marc-Andre Fleury revenge tour. I want to see this guy, the guy who's been the biggest babyface in the whole league for 15 years, go full heel turn for his final year and just hunt down the Golden Knights like he's the Terminator and knock him out of the playoffs. That would be brilliant.
I love it. All right. Hey, Jesse, we'll leave it there. I remember last week I had you on the live show and I said, what's it like being the only writer that can kind of sit back and, you know, kick your heels up and relax around the expansion draft? Well, hockey gods have made sure that you made up for that with this seismic trade on the Tuesday. So listen, thanks for doing this. Look forward to reading all of your analysis around the Fleury trade on The Athletic, and we'll do this again next week.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Jesse.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
All right, always great to get Jesse Granger on, and certainly when the Vegas Golden Knights are at the top of the news cycle, it's great to get Jesse's analysis here. I wanted to bring up one other thing because I thought this was going to be right in your wheelhouse. Josh Cloak, who does a great job, mostly covers the Toronto Maple Leafs and writes about Toronto things, did a really interesting column this week at The Athletic, Sean, in which he openly mused about, hey, what if we got rid of the draft? What if every 18-year-old kid was essentially a free agent and got to handpick their spot? And at first glance, people would be like, wow, it's stupid. Only the best teams will get it. But look, that's the way they do soccer in Europe. And there's other sports. Like it's very much a North American thing where teenagers don't get to kind of choose their place of employment. And I'm wondering, because, you know, you've always got such great sort of opinionated takes on all things hockey. What did you think of that idea? Do you think that there's any merit in getting rid of the draft as we know it and replacing it with a system where maybe the top 20 prospects get to handpick their destination? And then after that, there is a draft for maybe the lesser known prospects. But hey, if you're at the very top of the heap, if you're Owen Power, maybe you're like, you know, I don't want to go to Buffalo, but I'd like to go play in Colorado. Or I'd like to go play in Seattle. Or is there any merit to that?
Yeah, I mean, let's preface this by saying, and Josh addresses this in the piece, there's virtually no chance it's ever going to happen. There's no movement for this to happen in the NHL. But yeah, there's all sorts of merit to the argument, starting with the fact that we've just sort of internalized this idea that the very best in the world at a certain job just get told where to go. And that doesn't happen anywhere outside of sports. You know, if you spend your youth trying to train up and become good at something, you go off to college, or you go do an apprenticeship or something, and you're ready to finally go and do this for a living, you know, you don't submit your name and then get a phone call saying, pack up, you're headed to Winnipeg, and you don't have any choice on the matter. That's where you're going to go. You get to choose. You get to weigh the pros and cons of different places you could go to work. And there's, I think, just almost a moral argument that same courtesy should be extended to professional athletes. Now, beyond that, financially, probably makes a lot of sense, both for the athletes themselves and for the league. Look, I'm sorry, Oilers fans. I know you're sick of hearing about the Connor McDavid draft. He made one face on TV, and every Leafs and Rangers and Blackhawks fan has been using that to try to pry him away from you. But the reality is, Connor McDavid going to the Edmonton Oilers cost the NHL tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, just based on what they could have done if he had wound up in a bigger market. And you could say that for other guys as well. So there are those arguments. Now, the counter argument is the flip side of what I just said, which is, hey, your league isn't just big markets. There's smaller markets too. They've got to be competitive. So what are we doing here? If every year, every time there's a Connor McDavid or an Austin Matthews, or even an Owen Power, if they're all going to New York or Toronto or Montreal or wherever, what's the rest of this league even supposed to do? And that is, you know, there's something to be said for that. I don't know that you'd necessarily see it that way. I mean, you and I, we're both here in Ottawa, and Ottawa's a team. A lot of people would say, hey, if you didn't have the draft the way it is, no, I mean, Connor McDavid's never coming to Ottawa on his own. But we do kind of have a bit of a test case for this, and it's college free agents. They get to pick and choose where they're going to go. And actually, Ottawa has been a pretty attractive destination over the years for college free agents, partly because there's opportunity here and there's a development system and they can feel like, yeah, you know what, I'm going to get my NHL career off to a good start if I go there. So it would put an incentive on teams to make sure that they had opportunity, make sure they were well-run, an attractive destination. I think that's the best argument as a fan, is that we shouldn't be rewarding failure. We shouldn't be rewarding teams that screw up and finish last every year. We should be pushing teams to build the best organization on and off the ice that they can and make themselves attractive to these guys. I do still think that, you probably do run into an issue where the top markets are the most attractive destinations for the very top guys. Is that fair? No, I'm not sure that it is. Is it fair that we decide where these guys have to play based on some ping pong balls? I don't think that's fair either. So I'm happy to have the conversation. And you know, as Josh makes clear, there's a lot of people in the league who think that actually there'd be some merit to it, even though virtually everyone acknowledges that it's never actually going to happen.
Yeah, it's one of those great debates to have with a friend over a beer, right? Like, and there's some pros and cons, but I like the fact that there's some merits to it. And I think that you're right. Like in no other circumstance, and imagine you're a grade 12 student, or you're in the 12th grade and you're graduating high school and you're going to university and you don't get to pick your institution. They pick you.
Yeah.
You'd be like, well, okay, I guess I'm going there. Like, it's, you're right. It doesn't happen in any other field. And so it's again, it's all collectively bargained, and I'm sure this will never happen, but it was a really cool article, a neat premise, and I would encourage our listeners to check it out, that Josh did that. All right, Sean, we're almost out of time on this free agency frenzy edition of the Athletic Hockey Show. So why don't we just jump ahead and do a couple of This Week in Hockey History? Because surprisingly, we do have some pretty juicy tidbits here for a late July This Week in Hockey History. You would think it wouldn't be full of interesting tidbits. We got a couple. Let's start with this one. I got two things from July 27th, 1995. Okay, so July 27th, 1995, Brendan Shanahan gets traded from St. Louis to Hartford for Chris Pronger. Shanahan for Pronger. Here's part one of my question to you, Sean. Is they both end up in the Hall of Fame, both arguably in their generation. Pronger was arguably best defenseman, Shanahan arguably best power forward. Is this the greatest one for one trade in hockey history?
You know what? I think there's a real good case for that, especially if you get really strict on one for one. If you're saying, you know, no draft picks, no nothing on either side, because there's been a lot of famous trades that we remember as one for ones, but they had picks thrown in on the side, like Denny Savard for Chris Chelios comes to mind. And there's been a few other ones like that. If you're just looking straight one for one, this absolutely might be there, because you had Brendan Shanahan was absolutely in his prime. Chris Pronger wasn't even there yet. He was just entering his prime. And it was a real fantastic deal. I mean, if I was going to go way back, maybe Johnny Busick for Terry Sawchuk would be the one that I would put on the leaderboard. And it might take some time before we can really judge kind of the careers of Shanahan and Pronger historically the way we can those other guys. But in the modern era, yeah, that might, with all apologies to Taylor Hall and Adam Larson and Bob McKenzie's famous tweet, I think Pronger for Shanahan might be the greatest. The trade was one for one of all time.
Okay, so then the other part of this is, if you look at Brendan Shanahan's transaction page, okay? Now, granted, the first, when he moved from New Jersey to St. Louis, that was part of the Scott Stevens compensation. But when you look at the career of Brendan Shanahan, Sean, he was technically traded for three Hall of Fame defensemen in Scott Stevens, Chris Pronger, and then later Paul Coffey. Like, has there ever been a player in hockey history that was involved in three separate trades with three players that were that good as Brendan Shanahan?
Yeah, you know what? I've been looking down my list and I'm not sure that I can find anyone. Again, if we're counting the Scott Stevens thing as a trade, and I know some people will say that shouldn't count, then that, I'm not sure that anyone can have three guys who were that good. There's some that are close. Mark Recchi has been traded a bunch of times for a bunch of guys, including some real good players. Rick Walmsley was involved in the the Brett Hull trade, of course, but also in a deal with Stefan Richey and Shane Corson with the pick, and Peter Nedved's another guy. But I'm going to throw one at you that is to my mind, one of my favorites, because this is two Hall of Famers and a guy who was pretty darn good, even though he wasn't a Hall of Fame caliber. And it's three separate deals. And I'll give you the players. I want to know if you can tell me the player who was traded for them.
Okay.
Jari Kurri, Doug Gilmore, and Vincent Danfous. This guy was involved in trades that saw all three of those guys going the other way.
Wow. It's
three separate deals. And I'll throw a hint in. All these deals were just a few months apart.
Wow. So this, you know what? Well, I'm thinking of that Vincent Danfous. Is it the Edmonton-Toronto trade?
Mm-hmm.
It is?
Yeah, it is. Yep.
Wow. Well, it can't be fewer.
He went to Edmonton, to Toronto, and then on to Calgary in the Doug Gilmore trade. And I'll throw one more hint out there just for the listeners who might be trying to get this. Not a great player, but still a guy whose name you hear quite a bit these days.
Is it Craig Berube?
Yeah, it's Craig Berube.
It is. Yeah. Wow.
The early 90s tough guy. And in fact, it was he played in the NHL for 17 years. And these were the only three player trades that he was involved in. And it was rapid fire. He was traded in the, I want to say, 91 offseason in the Jari Kurri trade to Edmonton. They flipped him to Toronto right away. And then he plays in Toronto for 2 months. I go out and get his jersey for Christmas. And a week later, he's on to Calgary in the Doug Gilmore trade. Three of the biggest trades of the era. Same guy involved in all three of them within a few months.
And don't you feel like Vincent Danfous is the type of guy that all of a sudden, randomly, he's just going to be in the Hall of Fame? And you're like, well, he's got 1,200 points or whatever he has.
If Guy Carboneau can do it, yeah, then Danfous would be the guy that you might sneak in there.
Okay, one other thing I am going to sneak into this show. July 29th, this week in hockey history, July 29th, 1994, involves another trade. The LA Kings trade Luke Robitaille to Pittsburgh for Rick Tocchet, which, hey, again, on the surface, pretty good one-for-one trade. But here's my question. I mean, like, I barely remember Luke Robitaille's stint in Pittsburgh. It's like one of those fever dreams. I'm like, oh, yeah, that happened. But I don't really remember much of it. But here's my question. How many Hall of Famers, and Luke Robitaille's a Hall of Famer, would have spent one season with a team in the prime of their career? So Luke Robitaille was 28 in Pittsburgh. It's not like, you know, at the end, you see like Zdeno Chara goes to Washington, or you see, you know, guys bounce around.
There's a million of them, a million guys. It's usually the Red Wings or the Rangers, but it's at the end of their career.
Yeah, Modano and Alfredson and whoever else you want to put on the list. How many guys have pulled a Luke Robitaille, which is like, oh yeah, damn, I forgot that guy played there. And then, wait a minute, that was in his prime. Who else is like a Luke Robitaille that in their 20s, in a Hall of Fame career, just had a cameo with a team and then moved on?
I'll give you a few.
Hossa?
Hossa's a good one. Yeah. Hossa's up there. But I got three for it. I got three Hall of Famers. First of all, honorable mention, again, second question in a row, Vincent Danfous, that 1 year in Edmonton.
Yeah, that's
where
right.
Where he just dropped in and then it was on to Montreal. But the three that come to mind for me, one guy, this was a bit over one season. It was about a year and a half. But Mike Gartner had a stop with the Minnesota North Stars. And I just can't picture Mike Gartner in a North Stars uniform. I can picture him on a whole bunch of different teams, Washington for sure, the Leafs, the Rangers, we certainly remember. But he was on the Minnesota North Stars for a year and a bit. So that one's weird to me. A guy who was there on a team for much less than a full season, but Ed Belfour, the San Jose Sharks era. That's a weird one where that was close to the deadline, I want to say. He gets traded from Chicago to San Jose and then goes on and signs with Dallas in the offseason. But he played 10 or 15 games for the San Jose Sharks. And then the other one that's maybe the most memorable, but Paul Kariya going to the Colorado Avalanche for 1 year after he leads the Anaheim Ducks to within a game of the Stanley Cup and then has a falling out with the organization. And goes and signs with Colorado, along with Teemu Selanne, who was a little bit older and stuck around. And remember, we all thought like, oh my gosh, Kariya and Selanne in Colorado, they're going to be unstoppable. And it just didn't work out. But that to me would be maybe the closest comparable of a guy who was really well established with one team, Hall of Fame credentials already on the resume, and then he goes and does a 1 year stopover somewhere else.
Yeah, no, it's pretty rare. Again, like I said, Robitaille, I don't really remember much of his time with the Pittsburgh Penguins.
All and right, then well, went to the Rangers, which people don't remember either.
It's, that's right.
This guy bounced all over. He had, I think, three or even four separate stints with the Kings. And we blend them all together and we just go, yeah, lifetime LA King. And he bounced around a lot more than that.
Oh, yeah, because he was Detroit, too, and Pittsburgh. Yeah, and
got his cup
Rangers.
In Detroit.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Hey, listen, we'll leave it there. Now, what can we expect on the print side from you later this week? Because I think, you know, your loyal readers are probably going to be wondering, are we getting a Down Goes Brown, like free agency, early recap, anything like that this week? Or what's the plan on the print side for you?
So I already had on Monday, I had my reaction to everything that had happened in the last week. So that was expansion, the entry draft, my thoughts on the Logan Mailloux situation, all the trades. So that went up earlier in the week. You can find that there now. And on Wednesday, so today, hopefully, as you're listening to this, I'm going to be doing a live blog all day long with Sean Gentile. So we're going to be kind of holding down the fort there, reacting to, fingers crossed, a bunch of really big signings and big breaking news throughout the course of the day. So you get all my reactions through the live blog there. And if nothing happens, then Sean and I'll have to get creative and maybe that'll be fun too.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to that. And speaking of live things, Haley Salvian and I, later on Wednesday, we're going to be doing a live edition of the Athletic Hockey Show, streaming it live on our YouTube channel as well. 3 o'clock Eastern time is the plan for that. So we got a lot coming your way. All right, Sean, this was a lot of fun. We'll leave it there. Thanks, everybody, for listening to this latest edition of the Athletic Hockey Show. We'll get you again next week. As always, you can drop us an email with any questions you have for us, theathletichockeyshow@gmail.com. You can also leave us a voicemail at 845-445-8459. And if you're not a subscriber with us already, you can join us at theathletic.com/hockeyshow and get 33% off an annual subscription.